Know when to hold them. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 198.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to the Art of Bombing Podcast. I'm your fun-loving host, Dan Bublitz Jr. It is Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. I hope you are having a great day, whatever day you may be listening to this episode. We have a great episode today. It's going to be a little different because while we did talk a little bit of comedy, because the guest did dabble in comedy, he's also a professional poker player and poker dealer. So we talked a lot about poker and some of the similarities between gambling and performing comedy. And it was a great conversation. My guest today should probably let you know who it is. It's Michael Klatt, good friend of mine. From the Sioux Falls area. And this is his second time recording this with me. I have to say thank you, Michael, for doing it again. He did record in studio, in the house, in studio back in like November. And then I got a bunch of new equipment, and I, like a dummy, reformatted the SD card, and I lost his episode. So with that being said, he had to reschedule. He was gracious enough to give me some more time, and we did a second time. This time, we recorded in my hotel room when I was down in Sioux Falls doing some shows. And it was in the morning, and we were both pretty, not very energetic yet, even though we'd been up for, you know, even though it was morning and we should have been very perky. We weren't very perky. But before we get to this episode, this great conversation that I had with Michael, let's take care of the housekeeping, shall we? Yes, we shall. The newsletter went out on Saturday, so if you're on the mailing list, you should have got that. There was a lot of great content. There's some comedy tips in there, some exclusive stuff just for the newsletter. The 10-spot spotlight article was in there with Larry Smith. All a bunch of fun stuff. It did come to my attention that the March newsletter did not go out like it was supposed to. There was a technical hiccup with the company that I used to send out my newsletter, the service provider. I don't know what happened. I couldn't figure it out. I just know that it didn't get sent out. So I combined March and April into one. So it was a huge newsletter that you guys got. So I hope you enjoyed that. With that being said, if you want to get the newsletter, this is only a monthly thing. We don't do a bunch of spamming emails every time an episode comes out or anything like that. It is simply once a month we send out a newsletter, and there's, you know, comedy tips in there. There's sneak peeks at future episodes. Now there's going to be the 10-spot spotlight in there where I ask a previous guest 10 random questions. And it's a good time. So if you want to sign up for that, go to the website, artofbombingpod.com. Sign up for the newsletter. While you're on the website, you can also buy some merch. Maybe you want to get a button. We got buttons there. Maybe you want a sticker. We got stickers there. Maybe you want a poster. We got posters there. Maybe you want a t-shirt. We got t-shirts there. We got the stuff there. Maybe you don't want merch at all, but maybe you still want to support the show financially. You can do that by joining our Patreon. You can do that on the website too, or you can go to patreon.com/artofbombingpod to sign up and join the Patreon. On the Patreon, we have a lot of exclusive content. We got episodes come out early, episodes come out without ads, without these intros, so all that stuff. If you don't want any of that stuff in your podcast and you just want to hear the conversation straight up, that's where you want to go. And then there's also great perks with each tier. There's only two tiers, so there's some other fun stuff too. You can get some merch that way and some cool swag for the podcast. But you know the best way that you can support this show is by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, maybe a nice review. Those always help. If you go to Apple Podcasts or anywhere where you can do a review of the podcast, definitely do. It definitely helps. And share the content. You know, that helps too. You know, if you're on the Twitter, retweet our tweets. If you're on the Facebook, share our posts when we're posting about new episodes, because we have a lot of great episodes coming. I mean, can you believe this? This is episode 198. And that means we're two episodes away from episode 200. And we wouldn't be here without having great listeners like you supporting us week in and week out. And I'm very thankful for that. Because I got to be honest, when I started this podcast 4 years ago, had no idea where it would come, and it's come a long ways, you know, both with the formatting, the show really started to find its groove, and we're still plugging away, trying to put out good content. Every episode, we try to do something better than last, and we don't always succeed, but we're getting there, and it's been great. So episode 200 is coming up, so get ready for that. That's going to be pretty exciting. I'm very excited about that. Without you, we wouldn't be here, but we are, and I want to say thank you. All right, now, before we get into this conversation with Michael, there's one last thing that we have to address. He wanted me to read this apology letter. I guess that's what this is. This is an apology letter that comes from Michael Klatt. So, I did not write this. He wrote this. He emailed this to me. So keep that in mind. So here we go. This comes from Michael Klatt. Dear listeners, Dear listeners, as the main subject of this recording, I feel somewhat responsible for the value you receive from listening to things that we say in this recording. For a second take, I feel we could have been much more polished. Who knows? Maybe I could have said more with less. So my sincere apology for the many things I said, without having listened, that I assume were inappropriate, crude, factually wrong, treasonous, or just in poor taste. If you wish to discuss anything I need correction on, or legit business inquiries, please email me at nomadpokerllc@gmail.com. For blind investments in many sordid activities, please immediately Venmo large sums of money, U.S. dollars, to @michael-klatt-poker. Again, I appreciate the time you're taking to only discover why this is the first time anybody has allowed me to speak on their podcast. Oh, I should say, yes, there we go. Sorry, I'm having trouble reading this. I'm bombing at reading his email. Too many words. And it's a little cliche, but let me start. You know what? I'm going to reset. I'm going to start this paragraph over. He said, again, I much appreciate the time you were taking to only discover why this is the first time anybody has allowed me to speak on their podcast. And it's a little cliche, but I feel like I completely bombed it. But what are we really? But the art we make of our own mistakes. All right, without further ado, here is my conversation with Michael Klatt. Enjoy.
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
I think my girlfriend broke up with me. Why does that always get a laugh? I've never seen a comedian say that and not get a laugh, but it's like one of the saddest things in the world. I can't confirm it, though. She had my cell phone number blocked. That's a punchline. See, if she blocked my number, it probably means it's over. But I guess the rest of you would just hold out hope at that time. Maybe she fell off a cliff. Maybe she was eaten by a bear. Maybe my phone just broke. Well, that's what I thought at first, so. I go up to the cell phone place, and I throw my cell phone down on the counter. I say, clearly my phone is broke. I've texted this girl 37 times, and I've not heard back. Those people at the cell phone stores, they're really jerk. They're real jerks. She says to me, not you though, it wasn't you. It wasn't your store. What store do you work at?
Z-Wireless.
I was at Verizon. cell phones run around. But anyways, I throw the phone down, get heckled, go back to the thing. Alright, throw the phone down. And she's like, just freaked out. She's like, oh my God, an upset customer. How are we going to fix this for him? And she goes back, and I'm sitting around. And, you know, she comes back. And this is the politest thing the girl has to say to me. And you probably have these experiences because it'd be really frustrating. I'm sorry. She sets the phone down. And she goes, sir, this is not a technical issue. She just doesn't love you anymore.
Thank you.
So you just did a poker tournament the other day, didn't you? How does that work? So that was a doubles thing, right? If I saw correctly.
Wednesday night, there was a tag team tournament.
Okay, tag team.
Right.
Yeah, explain that to me.
So typically when you enter a poker tournament, you just go and you enter as yourself, and it's a singles deal. It's, you know, a couple hundred participants. This particular format, though, you got a partner, right? It's a doubles deal, right? Like, you register as two-person team, and for the first, like, 2 hours, you each play your own individual poker stack like you typically would in a tournament, and then after that period, you combine and alternate every 20 minutes to just create a different format.
That's interesting.
Right?
That is very interesting.
So that's what we did Wednesday night out at Grand Falls.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely interesting that you did rotate, because that's like, do you get to pick who you go in with, or is that, it's all random?
No, in this case, you know, this is an event where you would, you know, they announce the tournament,
yep,
you know, tag team tournament, and you find a partner and go, right?
So okay, good. So you don't, because that would be, that'd be, you know, if you had to do, like, if they did randomized teams, like, that would be, because, I mean, when it comes to poker, I mean, you're spending money, so to, like, have to risk your money with somebody else, even though they have to put in money, too, but still.
right. It all depends on their situation, though. You might draw the best player that's in the event because they just didn't bother to come with a partner. So, you know, in this format, it is something that you want to have a partner to go to. So it's unfortunate if there's somebody that wants to play that doesn't necessarily have a partner. They can't necessarily just show up except just stand there at the line and go, hey, anybody else interested, right?
Yeah, yeah. If anybody needs a partner or whatever.
Right. So my side poker consulting business would be something that I try to promote through social media, people to reach out, and maybe we find you a partner, right? Like, you know, I'm in the poker industry in South Dakota, and you want to play this tag team tournament, you know, you hit up my email, and we'll find you a partner, right? I'll be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, you and Jim would do great, right? Like,
oh, yeah, yeah, you know. Yep, nope, that makes sense. That makes sense. What exactly, a poker consultant, what... Exactly.
Well, it's broad, right? Like,
it's very
like at
broad.
One time you were probably a comedy consultant, right? Did you ever, I'm just going to consult people on how to, whatever
no, I mean,
comedy.
I've never looked at myself as a comedy consultant. I mean, I've definitely consulted people by giving them advice.
Right.
But I've never said I'm a comedy consultant.
Well, I would say that you have acted as one in cases. And I'm going to just speculate that there's been times somebody's been like, hey, we're doing this thing and we need some comedy involved and we're going to reach out to Dan because he knows that, right? Like, right. So that's what you're doing. Like, so I'm like saying like, hey, I'm here. If you're a business owner and you want to like have a poker league in your establishment, there's a lot of ways you can approach that, right? You can hire a vendor that already does it. You can start your own format. You can, you know, you can do a format that's only live, or you can blend it with something that's live and online so that people participate through something through the week and then they end up at your establishment. Or you're just having a single event for a charity and you want a poker tournament, so you need to find 20 poker dealers to be in town at that time. Like, you know, so then it becomes like, hey, I'll help you find the staffing.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, okay.
Right?
Well, yeah,
so there's like
sense.
Like whatever is in that realm of like your interest, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And and that makes sense. I get that. Especially, I guess, if you're doing, because that's the thing too with poker. A lot of times you're right. It's poker tournaments. It's not just like a game with a few people or whatever. It's a tournament. So makes sense because you're going to have the dealers and things like that.
Right. And there's poker leagues that happen in bars. So it's like an entertainment thing that draw like a comedy show with.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. So like, every Wednesday night at the location, there's 60 people that come to play a free poker league. So you need to figure out, like, how do you engage the players? How do you reach out to the right people that will become players, how do you motivate them with the right prize pool, right? Like, you don't give them a grill, you give them a trip to Vegas, right? Or, you know,
whatever.
Yeah. How do you keep them interested enough while they're there with something inside? What do you put on the TV? Like, what kind of food do they want? When do they want to start and stop? Like, you know.
Yeah. What do you got to do to get them to come back?
Right.
Yep. All the things that entertainment and our, I should say, venues want, whether doesn't matter what kind of entertainment they're putting on.
Right.
Those are all things they got to think about.
Right, right.
Especially the getting people to come back.
Right.
The retaining customers. Right.
So there's a casino in the eastern part of South Dakota that's interested in regoing with their poker, right? So I'm thinking of, when I'm talking to them, like, maybe there should be a comedy show the same weekend as the poker restart, right? Because that brings another 30 people into the building, and they're not necessarily poker players, but maybe two of them are, right? And that builds off of that, and now, you know.
Yeah. And then you're also giving the poker players something to do when the tournament's not going. I mean,
depending on if it's... In some cases, that might be counterproductive because you want them to gamble, ideally, right? So there is... So you might not necessarily encourage them to go to the comedy show, even though they might be more just to play like a side game, you know.
Oh, gotcha.
Right, right. Well, so that's where you got to be kind of tricky with that, in the sense that, like, you're not dealing with just a convention center, right, where you're like trying to get everybody engaged. You have a gaming floor, so you also have to be cognizant of how the casino is going to look at it, as like, you brought people here to play poker, and when they're not playing poker, we don't want them, like, doing other stuff but gaming, right?
Yeah,
so it's
not like they're
going to shut down the thing, but they're totally cool, like, having the comedy show and bringing people there for that.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't necessarily say, hey, guys, we're going to take a break in the poker tournament.
Well,
right?
No, but I guess...
I'm not saying that's what you're saying either.
Well, no, let me...
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't play poker. Right. I haven't done tournaments. Right. I just assume that at a certain time, especially tournaments that last multiple days, at a certain time, the tournament for the day ends. You guys don't just start and roll through to 3 or 4 days just playing poker without breaks.
Right.
Is that true?
Right, right. That depends on what's going on in that particular facility at that time, because you may be running multiple tournaments at the same time. You may have five different events that start that day, like the World Series in Vegas, which is the biggest.
Yeah.
It's the continuation of the first poker tournament, which was just seven guys that basically came for a cash game with a trophy at the end, right? That's how it started. And then the next year it was more than seven. So you've got the big one, which is like 70 days now. Mm-hmm. Or at one time it was like 2 or 3 years ago, but now COVID and things are going to change, right? Yeah. It was already kind of adjusting... shortening a little bit because of online opportunities and different things. So down to a few weeks now. It was at one point maybe 7-8 weeks. Now maybe it's going to be 4 or 5 or whatever. Mm-hmm. But
that's still right.
So there'll be
big event.
There's always cards turning in that building for 58 days or whatever, right? But what was I going to say with that? Like, you might go to a different festival but you walk in at 2 o'clock in the morning in the area where all the poker tables is, and there's nothing going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the tournament you would start a tournament maybe at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and people would be busting out of that all evening long, which puts them in the steakhouse, might put them in the comedy show, right? Might put them in a cash game, which is just a thing you come in and out of, or at the blackjack tables or slot machine or whatever. So there is some synergy in that, right?
Yeah.
They might be interested in the comedy show and definitely come to it, but they probably wouldn't plan on it because they would be intending to play poker all night, because that was the first, like, hopefully we don't have anything else we need to do because we're just winning the tournament. Mm-hmm. We're never done.
Yeah, well, that's the only reason any casino ever does a comedy show. They're not trying to get people to come to a comedy show. They're just trying to get people in their casino to spend money at the out on the floor. I mean, I've been plenty of casinos to know, because you can tell by how the comedy shows are organized at the casinos.
Right.
That, and they end up, you do that, just try to get people in. Or it's the people who have been gambling all day, lost all their money, now they have nothing to do, so they go to the free comedy show.
Right. Right. Which is unfortunate, too, because if you're going to do it, why not, like, make it a good comedy show, too, right? And, like,
well,
some of these things are simple to overcome. And follow me out on this. Like, so now I'm thinking about this poker startup thing and the comedy show, right? Instead of it being all these things you talked about, maybe it would actually be a good, you know, comedy show, but you can only do it like 4 times a year, but you got to pay a little bit more attention to it. It's not just the status quo. You got to back up a little bit and think about it and go, hey, you know, we're not going to do this thing that these comedians are typically used to that you see, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't take a whole lot to do it much different, right? Like, it's just a little bit more preparation and a little bit more maybe just deconstructing the whole process, right? Like,
yeah.
Instead of spending the money on billboards, you spend the money on better comedians, and then you get people engaged on social media to talk about who's coming instead of, like,
mm-hmm.
just putting up billboards saying the date and the name of the guy, right?
Because yeah.
that's been done, right? And then the comedians show up, and there's a bunch of people that aren't there because they won tickets in a raffle that the casino gave away, right?
Yep.
Right, and instead of they could have just used their facility to say, hey, come have an awesome experience with one of the best comedy options in the world coming to your town, right? You got a great facility to stay in. You're going to have a freaking kick-ass bomber time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they might pay $200 for that with the good food and the comedian, right? It's like a cruise on the land.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a good model for that is look at Las Vegas.
Right.
There's a comedy club in almost every major
right.
hotel out there
right.
and resort.
Right.
Honestly, I think in Vegas, that's about the only, like, casino-related, like, comedy shows that I've done
mm-hmm.
where it's like, oh, this ain't that bad, you know? Although, unless, I guess there's another casino that I've done, but they actually have a comedy club in the casino. So it's like, they also focus just on the comedy and the entertainment on that.
Right. But, well, I think in that situation, you're talking about the owner of the comedy club is the owner, like he has space, right?
Yeah,
and
probably.
So it's like they're their own entity. They're not just a comedy club that's operated by a casino that then has this requirement to figure out how to make the comedy club work, right? It's a comedian who got space in a casino to have comedy, and it's a great opportunity for him or her or, you know, mm-hmm. them, because they have all this traffic, right? And they have the resources of the resort to say, hey, we're going to put whoever you're bringing on the marquee and all this kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. 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 Casino comedy is interesting. It's, I've definitely had some interesting experiences doing casino comedy. Some good, some
right.
bad. There's quite a few bombing stories that have been told on this podcast, actually.
Right.
At casino shows.
Right. You know, I haven't been around a lot of comedy casino shows, but I spent some time around, like, the music part of it, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
the Friday night dance bands or whatever that would come through the casinos and the crowd
yeah.
that would come out for that on dinner and
do all the things at the casino.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
the mecca of entertainment.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, in some areas that is the mecca of entertainment.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, right. That's why I said it. Like, you know, 40 years ago, it was the convention center or whatever downtown or whatever,
yeah,
right?
Yep, doing things downtown, yeah.
Or wherever, but now it's, you know, there's opportunities to build a casino almost anywhere, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, you got to be... The word casino is used very sparingly, or not used sparingly in our neck of the woods out here in the Midwest.
Well... Right, there's a lot of opportunities in the Midwest for many reasons. South Dakota particularly has the video lottery, which then creates the casino signs, right? So we become
yeah.
a target, right? So every comedian that gets off the plane in Sioux Falls or gets off the Greyhound bus from Minneapolis because the booker could only get them on a Greyhound ticket, that gets off in Sioux Falls, looks around and goes, there's a casino everywhere, right? No, it's a video lottery engagement center where you go in and you get raped with the worst gaming options in the entire world.
Yeah.
directly that directly funds somebody who, you know, operates these beer halls across whatever, and you know, so it's a business enterprise, and then half of whatever they make, or whatever, half of the profit goes to the state, right? And then that goes into the education fund, and then they back money out of the general fund so that they can spend it somewhere else, right? Just
yeah.
Typical gaming situation. That was set up really early because there was different opportunities for gaming decades ago, and then federal changes and whatever, and made it so that you didn't have to go to Vegas, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could go other places, and so you've just seen it evolve and become available. But in South Dakota, the video lottery, like, it's not even an open casino format, right? So, like, they made just a little area in Deadwood, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to Deadwood, and you can have a casino there. And then the tribes can have casinos because
yep.
they're not prohibited. But the rest of the state has no opportunity to build casinos in any area except the video lottery process, which is supposed to, like, you know, was sold as let's have this gaming opportunity, then we can take tourism dollars, right? Because nobody comes to play video lottery. It's like the worst gaming experience in the entire world, right? Like, all it's doing is getting the people that can't get to another game.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You have to play the video lottery because you can't physically drive to the casino, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's, I don't know. It's unfortunate, right? Because Iowa built a casino 15 minutes from Sioux Falls, right on the very corner of the entire state. Like, that cornered property is owned by the casino purely for the sake of employing South Dakotans
yeah.
and getting their gaming money, because it's, you know,
oh,
it used
yeah,
to be 45
so
minutes to Flandreau to get to a casino, right?
Yeah.
An actual brick and mortar casino that mm-hmm. wasn't just a video lottery hole
yeah.
or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And now it's 20 minutes and it's all Iowa, right? It's like, it's Iowa's, you know, this community of 250,000 people has a casino, which is fairly common, but all of that happens, that part of that happens in Iowa.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Which South Dakota would love to have that, right? But they couldn't figure out how to build a casino out here, you know, because it was threatening to video lottery and...
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, South Dakota's good at shooting themselves in the foot
right.
on a lot of things.
Right.
Yeah, that's... We're well aware of that.
Speaking of bombing, right? Like,
yeah, speaking
right,
of
you want to talk about, like, let's get political. I'm okay with that.
I'm not. I'm not going to put out... I don't want to do politics on my podcast. That's not what this is.
Right?
But,
it's just impactful, right? Like, it affects things that go on when you're here, so...
Yeah. No, but... Yeah, but speaking of bombing, this is a good time to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you did... I know you do... You focus more on poker now.
Right.
And you've had some pretty intense games and things like that.
Right.
But you also did comedy.
Right.
A little bit. So you got... I'm sure you got all kinds of different stories from
yeah.
both.
I mean, I've engaged comedy a few times. You know, I'm not...
Love the way you put that.
Right.
I've engaged comedy.
Right. Well, I can't say, like, I don't want to call myself a comedian because I'm just going to get called out on it, because, like, there's dudes in this town that have done open mics for 3 years that wouldn't even know me, right? And they'd be like, how could this guy call himself a comedian, right? Well
you could,
I mean,
say
I did
you could say you were a comedian,
right,
or
right,
I did comedy,
right.
but I love the way
right.
you phrased it.
Right. Right. Well, sometimes it feels like that, right? Like, either I'm engaged with that whole part of my life, or I just got to, like, put it away, because it's like this creative thing that,
mm-hmm.
you know, you may have related to that at times. But I did, like, what, 4 or 5 months ago, I did a few shows, right,
mm-hmm.
here in Sioux Falls. So my analogy that I gave you was more appropriate for a few months ago, because then before that had been a few years, you know, but maybe I'd done one or two open mics where I just showed up and was
yeah.
like, I'll just sign up and go up there and try to put something together. Those are all bombs usually, right? Like,
yeah.
yeah, like on the spot with nothing prepped for 6 months, right? Just
yep.
trying to, hopefully I can remember three of my old jokes and make fun of something in the room at the same time
mm-hmm.
and get 3 minutes in and gracefully get off.
And it never goes that way.
Right?
And it never goes that way.
Right.
Sometimes those are my favorites to watch, when somebody goes up and the first thing they say is, well, I wasn't planning on coming up here, and I have no idea what I'm going to talk about. Sometimes it goes really well, right, and they end up being really funny, but most times it doesn't.
Right.
And it's like, well, now you know what it's like to do comedy.
Right. Right. But this last engagement, I think I did, like, I was pretty serious, right? I had some time in my life, and I was like, I'm going to go back through, and I'm going to, like, take my experiences, right? Because there was, what, a good 2 or 3 years where I was an active open micer, right? And I was even occasionally booked on a show by request or whatever,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah,
it's not like I just haven't had that experience, right? And I was, you know, opening shows and that kind of stuff. So, but then it just kind of, I shut it off, you know, disengaged it for a few years. And then back last end of the year, kind of after, as things started to reopen, right? That's what it would have,
yeah,
been, right?
Yeah,
because,
yeah,
I,
yeah,
guess before that, I wouldn't have had the opportunity because you couldn't do any,
yeah,
live,
yeah,
comedy in August or whatever. So as it started to reopen is kind of when I started to re-engage it, because it was me becoming comfortable with just being out in publics, mm-hmm, and how that,
yeah,
was all going and how many people are going to come. And, you know, in the first show, I was a little leery. And then when I got there, I realized, you know, we can kind of just keep our distance. And you,
yeah,
kind of stay at your table and, you know, whatever, you,
yeah,
know, and it worked. But for that, those 4, 5, 6 shows, like, everything, I tried to be as prepared as I could, you know, and I took time to, like, try to write out, you know, kind of a game plan multiple days before so I could try to process it, adjust it, and then try to prepare myself to deliver it by memorizing it and, you know,
mm-hmm,
whatever sequence.
Yeah. To get your order and stuff that,
right,
you wanted.
Right.
And how did it go going back after all that time?
I don't know how to say. Like, I did the thing. Like, I was committed. Like, I honestly, I think I intended to do 10 of these, right? I did, like, 5 or 6. I intended to do, like, 10 and then, like, reevaluate and see what I had. And then I was going to have, like, 50 minutes of, like, 10 5-minute sets, right?
Yep,
like, I was,
yep,
getting recorded, and I'd be like, what do I do with this? Like, so,
yep,
I don't know exactly where I was headed, but then I obviously lost the energy and distracted. And so, and some of them I haven't even watched, right? Like,
oh, I haven't even watched or listened,
right,
back to them.
I think
yet?
There was like 5 or 6 of them, and I have, you know, I've watched 3 or 4 of them, and there's probably 1 or 2 that I haven't even hit play on.
I have. That's okay. 1 or 2 that you haven't hit play on, that's not bad at all.
Right, out of this group of 5, right?
Yeah, out of the group of 5, I have like hundreds.
Right.
I record almost every set,
right,
and almost never listen to it back. So.
Right. Right. Well, here's the thing. This whole thing was not, this wasn't a typical set either, right? Because a set to me is like I make 5 minutes and I polish it and I redo it, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I was doing different things every week, right? I was making the show. It was called Nomad Poker, right? And then I would get into this. I would get on stage. I'd be like, hey, I'm going live on Facebook, but I can't afford it, like, because I don't have a phone, right? I'm just like a dirtbag gambler,
yeah,
dude that ain't got no money, except I came to this free comedy show, and now I want to be live, but I don't have the resources, so I'm just doing my live thing here on this stage. And so instead of you consuming it through the phone, you have to consume it live, right? And if you could help me out, you can put me on your phone live or whatever, right? Please,
yeah,
feel free to broadcast or whatever. I'm just going to be up here doing 5 minutes. This is my 5-minute YouTube, right, that I can't record and put on YouTube because I don't have it. So you're just going to have to get it here, right?
Yeah. Have you thought about doing sketches?
Oh, yeah.
With that, like making a character that's not you, but,
right,
but that persona,
oh,
with,
yeah,
the poker and,
oh,
stuff?
Yeah.
Because... No, I wasn't there at that, so obviously I don't know how it went with the,
right,
audience or whatever, but as you're telling that, what you're doing,
right,
that to me is really funny.
Right. Well, so that might be the value of it. Like, so when you say, did it go well, I could say, well, I had 5 opportunities for a bunch of people to look at me awkward, right? That's what I had there. But hey, if I give you this 30 minutes of material and you look at it now in sequence, it might be brilliant or whatever, right? Like,
yeah,
you might enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it might be an entertaining 30 minutes because every time it was like, where's he going this time or whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
I was experimental. Like one of the shows, I'm like, I'm just going to have this premise where I'm going to be like a game show host. I'm going to like this 5 minutes is like about jumping in the crowd and giving somebody a prize.
Now, right? Yeah. Have you always been kind of experimental with your comedy? Like, because like when you started, right. I don't think I was around, or maybe I was and we didn't cross paths. Right. But then when I moved back from California, that's when I met you. Right. And you're definitely, when I saw you, one of the first times I saw you, I thought it was great. But you were definitely, well, I guess you would be what they would call alt comedy, I guess is how it could be described. But you were you're definitely different in what you were doing, you right. know. And so well, is that
me,
like,
tell me like what you remember about just something about what I was on stage, so I can kind of know where I was at that time.
Well, that was at Rookies, okay. And you were on standing on top of the stool.
Okay, remember, standing on top of the stool. Remember, that, now I know where I'm at that. So that would have been just. As we talk about that, that would have been one of those where I hadn't been on stage for like 9 months, right?
Okay.
So I think that was, but that was closer to the time I'd done it, right? That was probably my first big break, right? I'd like given it up for a while, and then I was at a show. I don't think I was intending to do any time there. You know, I came out because it was there, and I was like, all right, we'll sign up.
Okay.
And then I'm like just going, right? Like I'm just going on adrenaline to try to like get through that thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And I end up on a tape, on a chair.
Yeah,
I don't know what else to do.
But right? But the thing
it made a memorable moment, and there's a picture on Facebook too, which probably helps reinforce that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that was my point that right. I was going to make is that it was memorable. It
right.
stood out. So right. like, you know, when you talk about whether or not comedy, you know, whether you when you're at an open mic or whatever, whether or not what you're trying to do is effective or not. You got to look at, sometimes you do have to look at other things because it's like, well, maybe the set didn't go well in the sense that I didn't get laughs or,
right.
or, you know, or not enough laughs or one joke didn't work or whatever, but I left a lasting impression.
Right.
So now people still remember that one night I was standing on a stool
right.
you know, at the end
right.
of my set or whatever.
Right. Right.
It's like almost like getting the, you got to look for the silver linings, as they say.
Right. No, that's the art of bombing, right? Is understanding what you did,
yep.
and taking what you can from it, right?
No, absolutely, absolutely.
Which is when I'm back in the poker world, that's huge there because if you make a mistake in poker, there's certain things that you can maybe adjust based on that to use that to your advantage in the future, right? Because if you made that mistake, that's going to change perception of other players on your capacity, right? Or
yep.
or it could create some illusion of some different pattern that they're going to change their behavior on or something like that, and give you some opportunity in the future, you know, which is why I engage in poker, because it's not, there's gamble in it, right? Because we're flipping over cards and there's risk, but it's all about the positioning of each player against each other in that hand or that game or that tournament or that career over time, where the money moves around between the players and it's not, and the entities that are creating the poker are just taking money for facilitating it,
mm-hmm.
which is different than blackjack or slot machines
yeah,
or whatever,
yeah, yeah.
right? That's just a bunch of people engaging these buildings and always losing money. And yes, the poker industry engages the gaming industry and loses money because they have to pay them to facilitate these events. But amongst the player pool, there's some that succeed and some that don't.
Yeah,
right?
yeah, no,
so
absolutely.
There's a bunch of money flowing in. I've lost my train of thought.
You better
I'm talking
more,
too much.
You better have some more coffee.
No. I am going to have some more coffee, yeah. and I'm going to let you talk.
No, are you going to let me talk? Okay, I'll talk while you're... Well, speaking of that, going back to
like
the poker...
I feel like there's a question I'd answer, though, but go ahead.
Oh, well, I don't know. You were trying to talk about poker, how it related, I think, with bombing
oh,
and
just overcoming,
and
yeah, using
yeah.
a mistake and then...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we got there.
We got there. But with poker, like, you know, obviously losing a hand, like, have you, like... Because that can get pretty intense, but like for a bomb like with poker, would it be like, have you ever had an experience like you're trying to bluff or call somebody's bluff and they weren't, you know, and ended up not going in your favor?
Oh yeah, like, I mean, those happen all the time
that,
where you're just
say,
wrong,
that,
right? Like
yeah, okay,
like that's everybody's going to have that on a daily basis where you're going to perceive that a player is one position and they're not, right? And that's pretty much the basis of that entire game, right?
Yeah.
There's other ways to screw it up. Like you can show somebody your cards thinking that the hand is over, right? That's really bad, right? Like, if you're trying to, like if you're halfway through the hand and you're distracted and you think the hand's over and you're like, I have sevens, and they're like, well, there's two more betting rounds. That's not a good situation. So that would be a bomb, right? Right, yeah.
Showing
yeah.
your hand early.
Right, so I had, where was I? I'm in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I've raised I'm the first to act, and I've made a raise, right? So there's two forced bets, and I've raised. And a bunch of people fold, and then the last lady that doesn't have a blind out who's on the button is ready to make her action, right? And she's been intoxicated part of the day, I believe, if I remember correctly. And that's kind of happens with her, and but she's also aggressive, right? And she's an aggressive player. I've had some experience with her, and so I've made this small raise to open this hand, and everybody else has kind of got out of the way, and it's to her, and she's on the other end of the table on the other side of the dealer. Like, we're the ones on either side of the shoulder of the dealer, right? And she just picks up all of her chips, like the whole pile in front of her, and she goes to match my bet, but I don't realize she's going to match my bet. She's got all of her chips in her hand. She's drinking. She's like, it's the spot where everybody's just going to jam all their chips in. Like, she's ready to go. They're all coming in, right? And so she goes out, matches my bet as the other two players. No, she's the last. She would have had the big blind, right? Because we're at the end. Because she is the last one to act. So I positioned it wrong. But anyways, I've got a bet out. She's got to call it. And she matches it. It's what the dealer sees and all the other players, but I perceive her as putting all of her chips in because she's got them all in her hand. Like, I'm like certain she's just doing it, right? So I'm seeing a jam. So as she's calling me, I'm throwing my cards in the muck. So basically what she does is she matches my call, and then I just throw my hand away and give her the chips that I put out there without.
Oh,
right?
So basically
because
you folded.
I think she's
you
yeah, I folded she, because
you
I
thought she was matching
I was certainly,
and raising.
I was certain she was putting all her chips in, which was a dramatic raise over what I had put in, right? So it's an all-in jam.
Yeah, all
it's
in.
Coming. But she's really just going out there with her 65 to call my 15, right? And she's, like, putting the 15 out. But I'm like, oh, here it all comes. And boom, and as she does that, my cards go in the muck.
Oh,
so
wow.
What I thought was a raise was a call, and then I surrendered really early.
That's a bummer.
Right. So yeah. That's a poker bomb.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's definitely a poker bomb.
Right.
It's also interesting to me. I was just thinking about this too when you were talking about, because we're, you know, talking with comedy, you do did you know, you engage with comedy,
engage,
as you say it. But I've noticed
engaged.
I noticed, and maybe it's just because I know a few people, but I feel like a lot of comedians really gravitate towards poker. Like, and I just, it makes me wonder, is there like some kind of a correlation, like to get, is there like the same feeling of when you're playing poker, like winning as you get when you're like on stage having a good set?
Right. You're probably right. Right. Like, there's probably like I would say if you sort them out, comedians and poker players are more interested in having like intense physical experiences, right? Like,
yep.
I don't think anybody ever said, oh, I went down to the open mic and it was just chill and whatever. And it didn't, like, I just got on stage and it was like, right?
Yeah.
Like, you were either scared shitless or freaking out, or you said you weren't and you were.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, or you just, you know, went and it was like something, like you enjoyed, like somebody laughed and like that, you know, gave you the thing that a cupcake gives you or whatever, right? Like, that's why people are doing comedy and why people are playing poker, I would assume, in most cases, is to get whatever physical response they get from that activity.
Yeah, that hormone release or
whatever
the serotonin
is,
or whatever.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. For you, as far as, like, poker goes, like, what have you always been intrigued by poker, or have you always played, or, like, what?
Right. Right.
What gravitated you towards
my story
poker?
To that was I was exposed very cliche way by the movie Rounders.
Oh, well, that's...
Right? So the poker
I feel
movie,
like a lot of people...
Right, right. That's why I say cliche, because it's there was a thing, right? There was an entire industry expansion for multiple reasons. It was like a perfect storm, right? So, like, tournament poker started 50 years ago. People playing cards to trade finances as gambling's been going on for hundreds of years or whatever, right? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked into when the first card game was and when that kind of came up, but safe to say 250 years ago, there was some soldiers or something somewhere with a deck of cards trading money around, right?
Yeah. You're talking about what got
line,
you into poker.
Line.
Line.
Line. The movie.
Speaking of bombing.
Right. Line.
I was asking what got you into poker, right. And you were talking about Rounders.
I'm there. I'm back with you. I just wanted to say line again. I watched a YouTube video this morning about line, like where people were asking for lines.
Lines.
So like,
lines.
It was just right there for me.
Line.
So history. Yeah, that was just relevant that I got in when there was a boom because of the movie. Online poker became available, and the moneymaker effect, which is where the poker tournament thing had become this big prestigious event, and then this guy just kind of got in for little because he jumped on the online system and got into the event, and then boom, won it.
Oh, wow.
And so it really... After that, then, there was a lot of interest in recreating that situation and just flooded. So the tournament in maybe like 10 to 15 years went from like a 400-player event to like a 6,000, 8,000-player wow. event, right? So all these jobs and like this, that's how that big festival came, right? And so I saw the movie, and then I started looking for games, which I couldn't, you know, I think I drove up to Flandreau like that night and played poker with some guys wearing John Deere hats and playing 3-6 hold'em and
nice,
right?
$3,
yeah. $6, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So we did that. I had a heck of a time. You know, they gave me a lot of pointers that night, I'm sure.
Yeah. Get you trained. Well, I mean, obviously it's definitely something that, you know, anybody that plays poker can tell that, you know what you're talking about. I mean, because you've had some good success too. I mean, you've won some tournaments, like bigger right. tournaments too, that were right. part of the World Series, right? Because isn't right. the World Series like they have the main event, but it's like a is it like an annual thing? Like they do tournaments throughout the year,
right? Well, it's an entire brand now, right?
Well,
so,
yeah,
right. And it's even a brand that's so successful that other entities then have their own World Series of. Well,
no,
I guess
I
they're a World Series of
comedy,
poker, but it was the World Series of baseball first, so I guess I can't say
well,
anything.
Yeah. But
so everybody's stealing from
oh,
baseball
yeah, yeah.
is actually what happened.
Oh,
I can't
yeah.
say it was them. But they were one of the, you know, they do have a big thing. So the one tournament turned into the big summer festival, which then also spawned circuits, right?
Yep.
So they have an international and domestic circuits where they go for 2 weeks. So they had one in Oklahoma. They had one in Oklahoma that I was working as a photographer for and selling merchandise, and I registered one of the events, and I was actually scheduled to be the photographer for the winner's photo, and I ended up winning the event that I was.
So did you take a selfie?
No. No. Fortunately, the guy I worked for was great, and he was actually playing another tournament in the room, and I had to go over to him, and I had to be like, hey, man, I'm heads up with this guy, and I don't want to necessarily take his picture if I lose, right? Like, I don't want to, like, have him beat me and then, like, necessarily have to be – because I don't know what's going to happen, right? I don't know how it's going to finish. I might not just be prepared to be professional with a guy. Or, you know,
yeah,
I'm probably
yeah,
not,
yeah.
but I'm just going to be – you know, or people are going to
– getting ahead of it.
People are going to want to talk to me. You know, I can't be prepared. Like, I'm – like, I can't get ready for him while I'm playing him. So I go get the other guy and I say, hey, one way or the other, I'm going to need you to take this photo, right? So I just played the deal and kind of took care of it and got to take my winner's photo. And the next day I was back in the hall selling t-shirts.
That's yeah. so much like comedy.
Right.
Because there's lots of stories where right. people are like, oh, yeah. Like, they get on a late-night TV show, right. and then the next day they're working their job at Subway or right. something or whatever. Right. Right. Yeah. So right. it's very – lots of highs and lows.
Right. I had $21,000 in the safe in the room or whatever, right? And I'm downstairs – you know, selling like $100 in t-shirts that day or something, right?
But still, that's got to be a pretty good feeling. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
No, it was a great experience, of course. Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing was awesome. It was just irony of the situation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, that's always funny when that does. Well, we'll get wrapped up here. Where can people, what do you have any social media or anything that you want people to go check out?
Yeah, so... When I'm doing poker stuff, I have a Snapchat that I try to
okay.
open people up to. Nomad Poker LLC on Snapchat.
That's the only place.
Yeah.
To
perfect. I mean, everything else is just, I don't really have much else going on that spectrum. I try to perform more in the meta.
In the meta. I don't know. Did we use that right? I don't know. Did we use that
right? So I'm always going places, right? Like, I'm not doing it online. I'm trying to go places. I'm trying to meet people.
You're doing it live.
Right? Right? Live, right?
Like, I'm live.
Right. Right. If you want to follow me, I'll look behind me and see if you're there.
If you want to find me, you need to come physically find me.
Right. Right. I don't know. Try some tracking device or a drone. I can be found. I can be found on some FBI database. I don't know. That's where you can look for me.
I love it. All right. Sure. Well, hey, thanks for doing the podcast.
This is beautiful.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you.
Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.